Hello there, welcome to Famous Last Nerds, your one-stop pod for all things pop culture. Thanks for joining us this week. We're going to be doing our review of The Mandalorian as it's recently finished airing on the UK version of Disney Plus. We know a lot of people have already watched it because of, various streaming sites when it was shown in the States. So we've kind of held off doing it until then to give more people more of a chance to watch it. I'm Stu, of course, doing my wonderful Obi-Wan Kenobi impression as I always do, and I only realised about 2 weeks ago with my hello there. And Rory is sat somewhere a million miles away from me. How are you doing?
I'm all right. I'm all right. Holding up. What are we, week seven?
I
God,
don't
it feels.
know. Days have become meaningless, and time is just a concept at the minute.
Yeah, I'm all right with days of the week. But yeah, like dates and months and all that kind of stuff just kind of blends really. So yeah, I'm all right. I've been holed up, getting out when I can, but it's been a long process. I'm on furlough, if I've not mentioned it before, so I'm not working, but I'm trying to homeschool the children, which is going interestingly, let's put it that way.
Yeah, I don't have to worry about that because my idea of homeschooling is I can literally still blow farts on Lucy's tummy and that will keep her entertained for hours on end. So it's a little bit easier for me than it is for you. We did actually plan on recording this poetically on, well, I thought we'd agree to record this on
We didn't
Monday.
plan anything, although I did notice your tweet about 24 hours later, but yeah, that's because I'm not on Twitter quite so much.
Yeah, because I must have just put two and two together and thought, oh, we're going to record it on Star Wars Day on May the 4th, and we didn't. So it's currently the 6th, and there isn't a sassy Star Wars Day for that. You've got May the 4th be with you, and then you've got Revenge of the 5th. And unless you're willing
Nice.
to really stretch that out and say Revenge of the 6th, which kind of works more than 5th, because 6th is like Sith.
Yeah, it's closer.
So there you go, whatever.
There you go.
And it also gives
We
me a
start to do
chance
a
to sort
few
of.
podcasts on Star Wars, aren't we?
Yeah, it gives me a chance to talk about Star Wars because for about the last 12, 18 months, I've been in pretty much the biggest Star Wars mood of my entire life. Between the Clone Wars and Rebels cartoons, Jedi Fallen Order the game, The Rise of Skywalker, and then The Mandalorian. It's been a really Star Wars-y year for me. So I'm looking forward
Is
to
it
being
like,
able.
is it the Marvel gap where you've just gone, there's Endgame, that's finished, and then kind of just 6 months of pretty much pure, 6 to 9 months of pure Star Wars, really, for you, I think?
Pretty much. Well, I started watching the Clone Wars a while ago, and I gave up about 3 seasons in out of the six because I was really struggling to find streams. And then, of course, Disney Plus kicked in and it became widely available. So I was able to nail it all down and watch all of that. And then I was able to start and watch Rebels. They're set in different timelines for anyone that doesn't know. Like the Clone Wars is set between episodes 2 and 3, and the finale was aired over the weekend, and it's literally taking place during episode 3, Revenge of the Sith. And then Rebels takes place between 3 and 4, about 5 years before A New Hope. So that all they do is they really fill in a lot of the gaps. And for something as expansive as the Star Wars universe, where you've got, there's an hour and a half film, and then there's nothing in their timeline for like 5 years, and then another film pops up. Well, the cartoons have been filling in those gaps. What were Obi-Wan and Anakin doing between episodes 2 and 3? And then in Rebels, it's well, what happened between Order 66 and, Luke Skywalker and Darth Vader and all that? So it's been really good, and I've recommended them to anyone that's even remotely interested in Star Wars. You've got one of my Disney Plus accounts, and you've said you're going
Yes.
to get round to watching it because I would love to talk about one or both of them properly.
Yeah, it's one of those things. So I've always been quite a self-confessed sci-fi guy. So it's one of the things that I'm quite big on. But I've never really known much about the Star Wars mythology. I played various kind of games growing up, and obviously we've talked about the original films and what fans we are of those, and kind of the newer ones and whatnot. But I kind of had that big gap between the original films, watching them as a kid, and then probably being at uni when the prequels came out, and obviously not really being fussed about the prequels. And I think you're either quite diehard Star Wars or you're not. So a lot of people read the books and all the fiction and all the kind of stuff that comes along with it. Like you said, these series kind of fill in some of the blanks and whatnot. But I've just never really, you know, got into all of that kind of stuff. So I will be doing so. I've been watching a lot of TV. You'll probably be ashamed of me and maybe a little bit proud that I never watched Parks and Rec before. And I've watched two seasons in about, I don't know, 24 hours. So I'm trying to finally catch
instant
up and watch
shame.
That. I know. Because,
but at least
you know, characters like Ron Swanson. Yeah, obviously, you know, everyone talks about these characters and I'm like, I know the actor and I know Amy Poehler and I know these people, but it's that. And, the, you know, I've never seen Community either, which I know is shameful.
What?
I'm not you. I don't have infinite amount of time until recently.
You do
and
now.
I have time.
Now
well, that's
you've
my
got
point.
More time than me.
Yeah, exactly. So I've been absolutely caning Animal Crossing and watching Parks and Rec on the side and then watching some series shows like Devs and Gangs of London and stuff that I might touch upon later. But yeah, it's been nice to have some free time to watch these shows because I think if you miss them the first time around, then, you know, like I watched How I Met Your Mother, I think when it came onto BBC Two originally, when that was, you know, aired. And so I caught that and you know, got, you know, the book for that, and I've probably rewatched that a few times. But it's nice to have, if you're watching a serious heavy show, it's good to have something like Parks and Rec on the side. So I try and, you know, dovetail two series. So I think once I'm done with this and caught up with a couple of other bits, I'll start on the Star Wars stuff. Because like you said, Disney Plus, obviously people complain about new content. We will talk about The Mandalorian, which is their big new content. But there's loads of other good stuff on there. I've been watching some of the National Geographic stuff, but there's also all these old series of stuff. Like Jacob got super excited that the Lilo and Stitch series was on there because he tried to find a stream for that. Or I tried to find a stream for that many a time because he's obviously was obsessed for a couple of years. And there's loads of cool stuff on there. So, and all the shorts, all the Disney and Pixar shorts are on there, which sometimes quite hard to find. So, yeah, it's been good, man. I've been enjoying your Disney Plus account very much. So,
yeah, as everyone has, because I've given login, I've maxed out all my accounts, and I've given them to a bunch of people because I may as well get the money's worth out of it. But I've really been enjoying it, and it's just a shame that when it came to The Mandalorian, the big stickler that a lot of people had with it was that the series had been aired months before in its entirety in the States. Yet we had to wait and get it weekly, which was stupid, but I understand kind of why they did it, because the logic that's been put to me is, well, they know that if they make it all available straight away, people will sign up for a month and then they'll just cancel once they've watched it all, and they needed to keep people on the hook for long enough to go, oh yeah, but there's also this and there's also National Geographic, and oh, my wife and my kids like watching these things. And I don't know whether I subscribe to that, because I think you were either going to get it or you weren't.
Potentially. They're obviously doing a free trial kind of 7-day thing. They've been kicking around, not like Netflix where they're giving longer. But I think, like you said, like because they don't have any original content. And like newer films, like what, Rise of Skywalker, did that drop this week on Monday?
They launched it on Star Wars Day.
So that, and then Onward will probably come in a couple of months' time, which is the Pixar film that came out before the lockdown. So there's a few bits which are like newer material that, you know, but they're going to struggle after that point, because their big bankers were obviously the Marvel shows that we've discussed in the past. And I think the first one is, what's the first one? Bucky and Falcon show will
Falcon
be first.
Winter Soldier.
Yeah, so that'll be first, but that's not going to drop and probably until next year now, I think. So the problem they've got a little bit is they've got nothing to tide them over. So The Mandalorian is really their banker. And like you said, they're just hoping that people stick around for all the other content, which in fairness is pretty good, because you've got this huge catalogue of all the Disney animations and all the Pixar animations. And then, like you said, National Geographic's actually quite impressive. It's a huge catalog of stuff in there, so they're trying to keep it up. But you know, Netflix is still got so much original content now that they are kind of trumping Disney a little bit in that side. But like Disney Care, you know, they made $3.5 billion on Avengers last year, so I'm sure they're coping. But it's going to be interesting what comes and what follows, really, in terms of the Star Wars kind of side of things and the Marvel side of things, because that's their two kind of the major things, and all their other Disney products that they're just obviously, you know, coining in infinite amounts of money on. So it's going to be interesting what follows. But you know, if we talk about The Mandalorian, really, you watched it a while back. I did watch it a little bit upon release, but then I've kind of finished off since and kind of had a bit of a rewatch and a catch up. I only watched about 2 or 3, 4 episodes when it first aired and wasn't bowled over by it, but I've kind of come full circle, really, because the last kind of 4 episodes are really good, and kind of I get what they were going for, which is kind of original feeling of Star Wars content, kind of Rogue One-esque, but
yeah,
a bit different.
Like I was hooked as soon as they announced it, because Boba Fett has always been a bit of a cult classic character, hasn't he? He's not in the films that much at all. He does and says basically nothing in the film, and yet he became this smash hit and everyone loved him. And in the main series of films, we knew nothing about him and about Mandalorians. And as you said before, it's something that's been explained in the novels and the graphic novels and in the Clone Wars and Rebels. There's loads of stuff about who the Mandalorians are as a race, what they stand for, where they come from, blah, blah, blah. But for the main people that just go and see, you know, normal TV shows and normal films, nothing's been mentioned about them. So they've really tried to flesh out not Boba Fett himself, but this mysterious race of people. And
yeah,
that was obviously what they were going for. That that was more interesting. That was more of a hook for people, because you don't know anything about them. If they were doing a TV show and it was, you know, another Skywalker thing, a lot of people probably would have gone, oh, but we've had like 9 films around Skywalkers. Can we have something else? It's like the Marvel stuff. People were crying out for a Black Widow film because we'd had super powered films before. This is more about a normal person who's just well trained and stuff like
yeah.
that, and it's something a little bit off center.
Yeah, I think you're right about, just to jump in, I think you're right about that. I think everyone's a bit Skywalkered out, to be honest.
And that they've made it clear going forward that the projects, both film and TV, that they're working on now aren't going to be in any way related to Skywalkers. I think they finally accepted that 9 films, and again, The Clone Wars is hugely following Anakin Skywalker. You know, he's one of the 2 main characters. So most of the first 6 seasons heavily focuses on him. So yeah, we are. We're a bit Skywalkered out. So it's nice. They've got this huge catalogue of races that they've invented, and new planets and new parts of the galaxy. Why not go and explore them? You know, don't just always go out and have the same thing to eat. Try something different.
I think that's what people were finding, or the backlash a little bit against these latest 3 films, is that yes, the Force Awakens, when it was released, is great, because you were so nervous about what they were going to do next, because obviously the prequels were interesting, obviously different takes on those, and I haven't really gone back to watch them, to be honest. So I'm going to see if I ever do that. I will do it at some stage. But you know, Force Awakens was proper, you know, like Star Trek. J.J. Abrams brought it back, you know, to kind of feed the original fanboys and fangirls, and kind of, you know, give everyone what they wanted, to feel like you're in a Star Wars universe again and have that buzz. But it's essentially just a retelling of the original. And then The Last Jedi comes out and it's split down the middle. People love it, people hate it. I kind of not sure anymore, because I enjoyed it at cinema. I watched it again. It's a good film, but obviously as a trilogy, they kind of don't mesh, because we've talked about this, that JJ obviously you know, I think he wimped out a little bit. I think the final film has got a lot to enjoy, and I do need to rewatch it. I've already watched it when we watched it at the cinema and we reviewed it at the time. I've kind of subsequently had mixed feelings on it, just because, I don't know, it just felt like it was just trying to appeal to fans and maybe not making any bold decisions. And I think they forced some of the Leia stuff in there just because they felt they had to, and they had a very limited amount to work with and all that kind of stuff. I mean, we discussed it at length, so you can go back and listen to that one. But I think what people are craving for is new Star Wars content that's different. And I think people got that, particularly with Rogue One, although most people coming out of that film don't really remember the characters. They just remember the Vader scene and that amazing kind of beach battle at the end. But there is some really good stuff to come out of that. And then Solo, kind of mixed reception, but I really enjoy it. I think it's really fun.
Yeah, I enjoyed it too. I was surprised because you spoke to me about it, because I didn't watch it at the time. I watched it quite a while later. And you said, you know, sort of go into it with the energy that I was going into it, which is I've not paid to see it at the cinema. You know, I'm not expecting it to be a $250 million cost, you know, expected to make $1 billion at the box office, smash it. It was expected to be like a little sort of offshoot of Star Wars that's talking about a beloved character in his early years. It's not meant to be part of the Skywalker saga. It's meant to be just a little bit off-center, like I said before. And that's why I liked it. I didn't expect, same as Rogue One. I've said before, Rogue One to me doesn't feel like a Star Wars film because it doesn't shove Darth Vader, Millennium Falcon, Skywalkers down your throat. It kind of just sits off on its own. And
the only issue I had with Rogue One is I don't think it does a lot until the final act. And I think a lot of the characters kind of fall a bit flat. I think that the robot in it is great.
Oh, K2SO, as always, is the hero. The only it's a film. It's like, probably 2 and a bit hours film.
Yeah.
Purely designed to serve that one little bit of A New Hope, where they talk about, you know, let's hope this intelligence is good. A lot of people died to get this. It's a whole film.
And I felt like that didn't need to be told, you know what I mean? But there's enough original content in there to make it interesting. Do you know what I mean? So,
and I've said to a few people that one of the things I like about it is there's so many tropes in films, and this defies the big one where the heroes survive. None of them.
Yeah.
They are all dead and incinerated, and I love the fact that they've gone, well, you might have expected, you know, Jin to get away or whatever. Nope, they are all ashes. Everyone's dead.
Yeah, and I think that was
dead as well.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah, and I think that was the right way to go with it. And I've watched it again quite a few times. It's a really good film, and I kind of, going into Mandalorian, I kind of wanted more of that, really.
Did you get that sort of same vibe from it?
Yeah, do you know what? Because a lot of people basically say Star Wars is like a Western in space, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? It's all the gunslinger kind of stuff. It's the people for hire. It's the, do you know what I mean? It's every time they go into a bar, which we've talked about, like one of my favorite scenes is the bar. Since it's like going into a Wild West bar, you know, with all the characters, and that's what it's leaning into, isn't it?
It's that, and it's also, I mean, the original premise was it's meant to be like a space age version of what's the Japanese director? Is it Kawasara or something like that? He's done like a load of samurai films, and that's what a lot of them are meant to be based on. It's the samurai way of doing things. But yeah, there's always, especially in this, that Mando's got a huge Western vibe. And it's another trope that's common in Star Wars films. All the shit goes down in these dingy bars, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
If you want to find, I mean, Obi-Wan says it, doesn't he? You know, it's a wretched hive of scum and villainy. That's the same throughout the prequels, the originals, the sequels, the offshoots. If you want to find anyone who's a bit dodgy, you go to one of these bars and you'll find them there, and there'll be bounty hunters.
And I mean, that's what everyone loved about the originals, is you had such a clean-cut character, especially like Obi-Wan and Luke Skywalker, especially Hamill in that first film. It's like ultimate.
When he's barely learned how to shave and he's sat there surrounded by just pure scumbags.
Yeah, and he's such an innocent guy. He's basically a farm worker, do you know what I mean? On a farm in the middle of nowhere, no existence, no life. And you see how many films have basically ripped that off, that concept. You know, you've got your innocent one, and then you've got Han Solo, who's the, you know, he wants to be him, and ladies want to be with him. And
he's the wrong side of the tracks, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly. And so you've got the kind of, it's just classic storytelling, but it all, well, it probably originated in other forms, but Star Wars certainly has been one of the most influencing factors in modern, you know, pop culture. So you've got that, and in this, you've got that classic kind of take on that, where you've got all these people that have fallen after, you know, the fall. What is this set after? Return of the Jedi, isn't it? 5 years or something like that.
It's after Return of the Jedi. It's set something like 5 to 10 years after the Empire has fallen. So the Empire's not around, but they've still got some loyal pockets around the galaxy that still kind of like that oppressive way of doing things. And some people have fought back, but not as full on as the rebellion did. So it goes back to the Wild West way of doing things, where you could travel around a bunch of different planets and each planet is going to be governed differently, because it's purely who's taken over and who's gone, right, I'm having this planet, I'm going to run it like a dictator. But then,
and that would always lead to, you know, your guns for hire, wouldn't it? It would always lead to your guns for hire and your people, kind of a bit like Guardians of the Galaxy, and not to, you know, but you kind of, good guys done bad, and you know, people
that's where the Kurosawa, that's his name, I've just looked, that's where the samurai thing comes in, because that's the whole point of the samurai, isn't it? You know, that the Mandalorians are very heavily inspired, I think, by them. Is yes, they are maybe a smuggler, or they are just a gun for hire, but they do so with a really, really strict code of ethics, and they're kind of moral in an immoral way. You know, they might shoot you, but they'd only shoot you because you were the contract. They wouldn't go in and wipe out a whole room of people. They would only go for the one person they were hired to kill.
Yeah,
that's an element that we've not really seen of Mandalorians. So it's nice.
I liked
the way
how they leaned
that
into that. I liked how they leaned into the mythology of it all. I liked how they, you know, the discipline and the, you know, not taking your helmet off. Obviously, you know, and it was interesting because you're thinking, wow, is he really not going to take his helmet off this whole time?
Strange, because a lot of people have theorized that isn't Pedro Pascal under the helmet.
Well, to be honest, parts of it aren't. Like, he was interviewed to said that he wasn't always on set because he was doing stuff with Wonder Woman, kind of interlinking with this. There was times where it wasn't him. Obviously, he's the full voice work of it. And to be honest, like, his voice work is incredible. I think his voice just, you know, I thought, oh, God, this isn't going to work. Because people, you know, tune in for Pedro Pascal because he's quite an attractive gentleman, and so not getting him remotely, bar 5 minutes of him being quite badly injured with his helmet off, was quite a bold choice. But his voice, the way it carries, and I thought it was really good casting. I think he was great. I mean, the whole casting in this, we can talk about, is superb. And not just
some of the people that are alongside him. You've got Carl Weathers,
brilliant in this. Carl Weathers,
Werner Herzog is fantastic. Nick Nolte is the voice of Quill. Also, he kind of looks a bit like Nick Nolte, which is scary. Gina Carano, I thought was brilliant as Cara Dune. Ming-Na Wen as an assassin. Bill Burr came in. He's a stand-up comic, isn't he?
Yeah, he's really good, actually.
Clancy Brown was a brilliant one.
There's a few people I like. Richard
Ayoade
Jr. Well, I heard Ayoade's voice. Yeah. There's a few people.
Esposito.
There's just some brilliant people. Like, the whole cast is amazing.
The big one, you know what I'm going to say, is of course every Star Wars property, the best character is always a droid, and yep. this one happens to be voiced by Taika Waititi.
Yeah, I would imagine the episode was the one that he directed as well, where he's in that main one, I would imagine, because he, I can't remember, is it episode three? I get lost in the episode.
It wasn't Deborah Chow that. The one that he directed was the finale. He only did that one episode.
Well, I liked all the people involved. So, obviously, Dave Filoni we'll probably talk a little bit about, but he's Mr. Star Wars, isn't he? And they were quite smart to bring him in because he's the main man on Rebels and Clone Wars.
Yeah, he basically, by the sounds of things, there's actually an offshoot of Mandalorian. It's got Dave Filoni, Jon Favreau, and then all the directors. So you've got Bryce Dallas Howe, Rick... Famuyiwa or Famuyiwa, whatever his name is, Deborah Chow and Taika all sitting around talking about their backgrounds and stuff in the first episode because it's weekly. I think it's every Friday. And then going forward, I think they get some of the casting. So they'll get Pedro Pascal and Gina Carano. And when Dave Filoni talks, he was basically groomed in a way by George Lucas to be involved in the Star Wars universe, and he approaches things in a very George Lucas-y kind of way. But as you just said, he is now Mr. Star Wars. When you make a project now, you know, he's been doing Star Wars things for probably, when did Clone Wars start? Maybe pushing 15 years he's been working within the Star Wars universe, and he's been like the head honcho of three projects now. And, you know, that's not the kind of thing that's going to be taken lightly. So between all those three shows, you're talking maybe 15, pushing 15 seasons of various different things. So he's obviously doing something right, and he's obviously bringing the right people in and creating the right environment. I just think it's fascinating that you've got five or six different directors for eight episodes. You know, each one is treated as its own little sort of story that's anywhere from 35 to 50 minutes long. There's not many franchises would do that. A lot of people would come in and say, you know, like we saw it in Game of Thrones. You might do four or five episodes in a season, yeah. Then you might get two, then you'll come back in for one, then we'll get this other guy in for two. And they literally go... So it goes Dave Filoni, then Rick What's-His-Face, then Deborah Chow, then Bryce Dallas Howard. So first four episodes, four different directors.
Yeah.
That's quite brave to do, but they're obviously all doing it under Dave Filoni's guidance. So
Dave Filoni's guidance, but also Favreau, obviously, who we must mention because, yeah. I mean, Favreau's your man because he's literally your safe pair of hands. So we talk about J.J. Abrams, but, you know, you look at Favreau now, and people can like or not like Lion King. I'm not sold on it, to be honest. It didn't need to be remade. Second half of the film is much better than the first half, but you know, mainly because of Timon and Pumbaa, you know, kicking. But obviously, and that's the bit they don't. Yeah, they've got a little bit more license to play around with. The first half is just so. Like just a take off the first film, but that film's still like the fifth highest grossing film of all time or something insane, like 1.4 billion or something crazy.
And at the end of the day, when you are Disney, you are more concerned with the financials than the criticals. Yes. You're more bothered about how much it makes than what Rotten Tomatoes says.
I still took my kids to see it because they begged me to see it. I didn't really want to see it, but you know.
But that's because that's exactly it. They are the target audience, not you.
So. Yeah, so I don't mind. And they don't really go back to it. Do you know what I mean? So you can kind of get a sense of, you know, there's certain films that they will watch quite heavily, certainly Pixar films, you know, and you know, Moana and Coco and all those kind of films. You can know the longevity out of a film. Like Inside Out has probably lasted longer for the kids because they grow up with it and they learn different things when they watch it when they get older, because obviously it's about depression and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Same with Coco.
Start to understand the various different emotions more, won't they? About why,
oh, those films
why
teach
you feel
my kids,
so blue and where the anger
those,
comes from.
Those kids teach those films teach my kids better than I do, to be honest. Pixar, you know, Wall-E, life lesson.
Toy
Coco.
Story, the value of real friendship.
Oh, it's just, there's so much in there. Just put them on. That's parenting 101, mate, to be honest. So you're a winner if you've done that. But like those films are so well done, but they keep kids coming back and stuff. And, you know, Favreau's got that touch. You know, Iron Man was a huge success for him. Obviously works quite highly with CGI, as you know. He's got massive passion projects everywhere, but he's a big pop culture guy. Do you know what I mean? And he knows his Star Wars, but I think he was quite big on bringing Dave Filoni in. But he's been bold, like you said, to bring in all these different directors. Rick, surname I won't pronounce, I've been kind of keeping an eye on because he's a really interesting guy. I did a film called Dope, which I adore and always recommend. It's kind of my go-to recommend film. It's got a couple of interesting people, particularly Shameik Moore, who voices Miles Morales in Spider-Verse. And you'd like that film.
It's
good.
This is the first time he's done TV, isn't it?
Yeah, Deborah Chow's massive in TV. Huge in, like, she's done an episode of like every big show that's been kicking around for a while. Like,
yeah, her resume is
Mr. Robot and Better Call Saul and
what of relevant TV shows.
And she worked on Skyfall and Jessica Jones and a couple of the other Marvel projects on. And then, you know, Taika's obviously a safe pair of hands. And, you know, we should touch on Taika's been announced to direct a Star Wars movie, which I'm not 100% sure on, but at least it's going to be Taika. Do you know what I mean? It'll be original.
I am. Because the one thing you know you're going to get is you know it's going to be funny.
Well, it is. And I think a lot of these Star Wars films recently, I must admit, have fallen really flat on humour. I think they've tried and failed a lot with the jokes.
Apart from the droids.
Apart from the droids and Babu Frick, obviously. Yes. Legendary Babu Frick with his comedy timing. But I think everyone else in there has maybe fallen a bit flat with some of the jokes and stuff. And I think, yeah, it might work well. I think just bringing in new people, some slight freshness, and Taika's obviously the hip go-to guy right now. He'll be coming off the back of Thor 2, or for him anyway, Thor 4. But and so, yeah, he's going to be interesting what they do with him. But Star Wars does need new, fresh material because it's probably a huge property they've got, but they've got to keep it. They've got to revolutionize things a little bit. They've got to move away from Skywalker. I think Mandalorian's a good stepping stone into other areas because, like you said, it introduces some really interesting characters, introduces really kind of cool concept of, you know, this is a Star Wars universe, it's endless, they can work within it and they can just introduce all these new characters. And then obviously the thing that really has propelled this series into like the stratosphere is the baby, or Baby Yoda, or whatever you want to call it, the child. But it is just, that's the everything needs. Like every big album has a big single that, you know, launches a band, or do you know what I mean? There's something like that. And I think the baby in this, Baby Yoda, child, whatever, is the kicker. I am not getting hung up on it because I think everything else around it is actually really, really great. But, you know, you've got to admit, cute thing to pitch to the public.
Yeah, and it worked because I went and bought one. I pre-ordered one from the Disney store months before they were actually sold. So I've got one sat upstairs with me, plush R2-D2 and BB-8 and stuff like that because, you know, I'm a child. But,
and
yes.
There's a Lego set coming of his ship with a baby and, you know, Mandalorian and all that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? It's instant money for Disney and it's a huge part of their process. But at the same time, you know, getting a meme, getting a GIF everywhere, getting all this kind of stuff. I loved all the one, you know, when he keeps pressing the buttons on the ship and it keeps changing with the comms.
Yeah,
my favourite of that was Origi. Yeah, well, Trent Alexander, corner taken quickly, Origi is my favourite. If you've ever seen that, it's just genius. And so stuff like that.
300 different ones because every time I saw one, I'd go, one more. It's not going to hurt.
And exactly, and that became a bigger thing than the series itself, but obviously that propels the series along with it. And the series itself, like you said, you know, gets, you know, infinitely better as it goes along. I think it introduces some really cool characters. And I think the first few episodes are quite standalone, aren't they? So you do get your 40-minute episode, you're kind of under 40-minute episode, and then you're slightly longer, 45, 50. So, like you said, they have brought a director in to do each one to an extent and made them quite, given them license. You can feel it. It's not like they've gone, right, you've got 60 minutes to do each episode specifically, this, that, and the other format. I think they've been quite relaxed about it, which is why it kind of works.
Yeah. So if we start off at the beginning, it's 5 years after the fall of the Empire, and we get introduced to a few of the characters. And as you say, it feels a bit more standalone. And the big thing that happens at the end of that episode is when we see Baby Yoda or whatever the hell his name is, and it's another example of them trying to explore. There's only ever been two of Yoda's species. There was obviously Yoda, who by the time he died was like 900 and something years old. And in this, Baby Yoda is like 50. So he's not a baby by our standards, but by his species he is. And as time goes on, we realise that the reason that Werner Herzog's character wants him, do we ever actually find out his name, or is he just the client?
I don't think we find out half the names in this show.
He's just referred to as the client. We never actually find out what his name is or who he works for, although it's suspected that it's to do with cloning the species, because they've worked out that whatever species they are, which we still don't know what their name is, where they're from, anything about them. We've only ever met Yoda and this one girl who I think her name was Yaddle, something like that, and they want to clone the species and make a load of force sensitive soldiers, something along those lines, because there's Easter eggs. The scientist that comes along that's experimenting on him has got one of the logos on from the Kaminoans in the prequel trilogy, the ones that created the clone army, and so it's all interlinked and what have you. It's hard. The first few episodes are, for some people, were hard to get behind, because as you say, it was like 40 minutes stop, and then the next one comes along and it's, oh, okay, so now these other bounty hunters are trying to get hold of the child,
and you couldn't binge them as well, which is quite a bold take. So, you know, we're quite used to Netflix being, there you go, there's a series, watch it all at once. Do you know what I mean? The only time you don't get that with Netflix is if it's like an AMC property or something like that. But if it's original Netflix, original Amazon, even BBC, except Killing Eve, obviously now, they're not weekly. But most things drop, you know, in one go. So you're so used to going, I'll just watch all of these now. Like Gangs of London, which I touched on earlier, which is, I can't remember who the showrunner is, but Gareth Evans, who did The Raid. I don't know if you've ever seen The Raid. Indonesian.
No.
It's an amazing action movie, which I think you'd like. All set in this one tower block. It's a bit like Dread, but it was pre-Dread. But it's Indonesian, but it's directed by a Welsh guy called Gareth Evans. And it's quite an infamously, you know, huge action movie. Massive, crazy martial arts in it. Really fun. Really brutal, actually. And they've done a show called Gangs of London. It's a Big Sky production that dropped all in one go. Really good show, actually, but extremely violent, probably the most violent TV show I've ever seen. And all dropped in one, you know, 10 parts, hour-long episodes. And you know, you're used to that now, aren't you? So you binge these shows now in a couple of nights, or a few nights, or a week, whatever. We did it always, me and you did it with Daredevil and all the Netflix stuff, Marvel Netflix stuff. And then you get this and you got to wait.
Friday, we try and race it.
Yeah, exactly. Like Daredevil season 3, I think I was off or something. So I watched literally all in a day, basically, which is insane. But it was the way we did it. And you're racing through these things, but they don't give you much time to breathe. But with something like this, I think the first few episodes, people were just like, I've waited a week for a 40-minute episode. Do you know what I mean? They needed more content. They needed more to get into it. I think because I wasn't really hooked until I watched them like more recently. I've had the kind of, I've had the ability to just kind of all watch them a little bit more succinctly, and actually works really well, because you can, if you had a slightly slower episode, you can go on to the next one. Do you know what I mean? So you kind of forget about that. And I'm not saying any of the episodes are weak, but I think there's stronger episodes in this season as it goes along. So I think it gets a lot better as it goes. So the last three or four, if you can watch them all in one go, you're really getting that kind of anticipation and that build up to like maybe watching like a movie, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? So, you know, it kind of works really well like that. So it's quite a bold decision. I'm wondering if Disney stick or twist with that, because I don't think weekly is necessarily the way to go. But
it's going to be interesting to see what they do, because season two is already underway and it's already been greenlit for a third season. So
yeah,
they obviously have faith in what's happened in the first season. They're obviously happy with the way it's been received, but I wouldn't be surprised either if, like you say, they either dropped it in all in one go, or if they dropped it in segments. You know, maybe if it was the next one was 8 or 9.
Apple do this thing. So Apple are doing a thing where they drop like 3 or 4 at once, and then they just to give you a bit to go off. I think what a lot of shows used to do is they used to give critics like 4 episodes, and then maybe not release the rest of it straight away. And it's interesting if they do that, because you get a bit more to get your teeth into it, and then it's got you gripped a little bit more, and then you can wait that week just to kind of each week to kind of watch the next episode. So it'll be interesting how that plays out. But I think the second half of the season, as I said, the first couple, it's just a kind of build up, and then you get the big standoff, which is the kind of, I think, episode 3 that everyone kind of went a bit nuts for, to be honest.
Was that the one at Sanctuary?
Yes, I believe so.
Where they're on the little planet, and that woman tries to get Mando to stay.
Oh no, the one before that, I think, which is when he takes the baby, isn't it?
Oh,
is that the one?
Yeah, when all the Mandalorians arrive.
Yes.
Yeah. So that by that point, we've obviously been. I don't want to just sort of read through and say, "Oh, this is what happened in each episode," because if you're listening, you already know. But by this point, we've been introduced to like this underground movement of Mandalorians, haven't we? And we start getting drip fed bits of information. So he gets his payment for delivering Yoda, and it turns out it's Beskar, which is this sacred metal to Mandalorians, which their armor is made of. It's incredibly strong. It's pretty much impervious to blaster unless it's at point blank range, which obviously for somebody who gets shot at for a living is going to be really handy.
He gets shot at a lot as well.
Yeah, he does.
And gets shot a lot, but obviously his armor helps. Yeah.
And yeah, it's got the Imperial seal on it, and you start finding out little bits of what happened, and it turns out that on Mandalore there was a purge, and the Empire has turned up and basically tried to kill off as many of the Mandalorians as they could. They've stolen all of their Beskar, knowing how valuable it is as a material and as a commodity. And they, instead of all being centered on one planet and, you know, going across the galaxy, they've been splintered into these underground cells all across the galaxy. Nobody really knows how many there are, how many cells, how many individuals, and they only sort of come up every now and then to do a contract just to keep them going. So when you get to that bit at the with the standoff with the client's men, who are like they're ex-stormtroopers, aren't they? They've still got their grubby armor, but they're not really representing the Empire, because the Empire is dead by now. That's a big moment, because this is like the first time that they've sort of shown their hand, and they've shown their numbers and the weaponry they've got. You know, you've got the big fella who's got the huge Gatling gun. They've all got their iconic rocket packs. They've got all kinds of crazy cool stuff that Mandalorians were known for, and this was a big move for them. But again, it's showing their honor, that they know that what he's doing is the right thing to do, and therefore the right thing for them to do is to help him escape. They can't just sit by and let one of their own get killed by a bunch of grubby, you know, whatever they are, you know, whatever their motive is for the child. They don't believe that it's as honourable as what Mando's trying to do. And it's interesting to see that anyone who was intrigued by that bit, would benefit from the last season of Clone Wars, especially because it's been heavily about Mandalore, but also Rebels, because one of the main characters in Rebels is a young Mandalorian girl. And they're a very interesting race to sort of have in the Star Wars universe. So, yeah. And then it gets to, once they've escaped, they get to what, it was one of the lowest rated episodes, the Sanctuary one, which was actually directed by Bryce Dallas Howard, obviously from Jurassic World, daughter of Ron Howard.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite episodes because I loved the way this was when we really started to humanize Mando, and he's opening more about his struggle. And of course we meet Cara Dune and we get one of the most gift moments of the whole series, which is Baby Yoda drinking his bone broth.
Oh, yes.
His little...
Yeah. It's one of those things that episode I liked, but it does feel separate to the rest of the show a little bit.
It's like they've gone, right, you've had three episodes that have been a bit more action-packed. Let's take a step back, take a breath. Let's digest what's just happened.
People and then struggle we'll with that out. Episode. I can't remember. There's a couple of other ones. Infamously, is it Stranger Things season two, when Eleven goes off to New York with all the other people?
Yeah, with all the other experiment kids.
And people don't like that episode. And I get why, because it completely takes you away from the story. But I kind of liked it. Do you know, I don't know. I've still got a bit of a soft spot for that episode. And it felt a little bit like that. There's another show I can't remember that's got a similar episode where you're building up all this story.
And then Walking Dead, wasn't there, where all of a sudden you just disappeared and you had this Morgan?
Yeah.
Episode, and we were like, the one where he was talking about why he doesn't kill, and
when he learned how to use the staff because he was imprisoned or whatever by that guy. Yeah. I can't remember something that like episode, that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was a long one, and we both said afterwards it was right off the bat, wasn't that after the Glenn thing?
It was something massive. Yeah, it was something
after the Glenn
massive.
Thing, and we were like, how do you go from a cliffhanger to making people wait a fortnight, and you've got this garbage pile in between to tide us over?
Yeah, I think you've got to be careful with that as a show because it does lose people. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's a couple of Walking Dead episodes that really have almost killed me off just watching it, because you just gone, that Michonne episode recently that I did watch, I was like, what the hell is this? Do you know what I mean? They've just taken away from the story that was building, and wasn't the episode before like the best one they've had in about three seasons?
Yeah.
And then they do that and you're like, what on earth is this? Do you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't make any sense to do this crap episode here, but I guess it's filling contracts of well-paid employees, it feels like it sometimes on these shows. Do you know what I mean? Like, they've all got to get their stories in there and stuff, so it's a bit sad. But, you know, that is one of those episodes, maybe it's a little bit out of place. I still think it's good. I think she probably got a ticket in because of her dad a little bit on the directing side of things.
They did actually say in this behind the scenes thing that they all felt like that episode was her being thrown in at the deep end because they knew that this was going to be a difficult episode to do. The major thing out of this was obviously it was the introduction of Cara Dune, who becomes a sort of will she, won't she stay around type of ally, and you don't know whether she's going to be. Is she just going to be in for one episode then disappear, or is she going to stick around?
She's a good character. Yeah,
her backstory is she's a shock trooper, so she's a storm trooper basically, and now she's turned against what the Empire stood for, and it gives a bit more of an insight into what presumably a lot of the other stormtroopers thought of. You know, they sided with the Empire because they either genuinely believed in them or they felt like they had no choice, kind of like what we see with Finn in the more recent films, where he sort of snaps out of his conditioning and realizes, hang on, it's that gif, isn't it, are we the bad guys? And like, she's only realized after the fact, shit, I was the bad guy, and now she wants payback against the Empire. But of course the Empire doesn't exist, but by siding with Mando, she can at least stick it to some of the ex-stormtroopers who are still going around the universe, kneecapping people and acting like it's still, you know, like it was five years earlier.
It's a shame that Star Wars didn't really lean more into that ex-stormtrooper thing, because obviously stormtroopers were never humanized, were they? You just kind of always saw them with the mask on. And they made that quite bold decision with Finn. And I just feel like they wasted that character. Do you know what I mean? In the last couple of films.
It's something, sorry, I should be...
Well, Rian like Johnson didn't know how to use him at all. Yeah.
But it was covered in the most recent series of The Clone Wars, because it's basically they've bridged the gap. The original stormtroopers were the clone troopers because I can't remember the wording, but the Imperial Senate and the Army of the Republic gradually became the Empire. So through the series, you see the clone troopers' armor start changing, and it goes from being very clone troopery to a bit clone troopery to a bit stormtroopery. And then as soon as that all happens, they all just get new armor. But then as the years have gone on, the clone troopers have died and they've had to have been replaced with normal people. But as you say, they've never really shown who's under the helmet. They've never humanized them. Are they all men? Are they women? What age are they? You know, do they go to, are they aliens, or are they all, you know, human looking? You know, have any of them got gills and stuff like that? We don't know anything about them. And it's nice the way they've tried to put in her sense of guilt and anger about the way she was treated, and she was, you know, did what she did, and now she kind of hates herself a little bit for it. So her turn in mercenary is kind of her way of getting, I suppose it's getting things back on her own terms. And I was a big fan of the casting, because I think it makes sense to have somebody like Gina Carano in it, because you look at her and you'd say, well, yeah, she looks like she could hold her own. When we're introduced to her and she's fighting that guy in
she's a badass, man.
This fighting pit, you look at her and go, well, yeah, she probably could twat that guy. Look at the size of her. She she clearly could batter most people. So it's a lot more believable.
And it's smart casting. You get people like her. Who's the other one who's in Fast and Furious? Michelle Rodriguez, quite famously cast as being a hard ass, do you know what I mean? And you know, there's certain actors that are portrayed that way, but it's good because you need
if you'd had somebody like, I don't know, I can't even think of an
actress. Well, Gwendoline Christie as well, they wasted, didn't they? Because
her Captain Phasma, the way they built her up, she's wearing this huge, she's what, 6'1", chrome stormtrooper outfit with a friggin' cape.
Yeah.
And in the first film, she's in it for about, you know, 15 seconds.
She was like, for both of us, like one of the kind of crucial characters in the end from Game of Thrones.
The sequel trilogy's Darth Maul, built up in the posters, and you go, oh, she's gonna, nope, she's shit. She's absolutely shit. And she
struggled.
They really did her dirty.
Well, they did that. They did it with Finn as well, to be honest, because Rian Johnson had no idea what to do with him. And then JJ had no idea what to do with him in the final act either. So it felt a little bit like they've got these interesting characters, but they just went back to telling the kind of Skywalker saga stories. And it's a little bit, I think that's what we liked here, is these characters feel like, yeah, they're set in between in a TV show, but they're interesting characters with a bit to work, you know, bit to work with and work towards. And, you know, there's a bit of redemption arc, as you know, and there were some really interesting people in there. Do you know who voiced the Mandalorian who was in the last episode, who was left on the ship? I felt like it was someone famous, but I just didn't get the voice.
Well, I know Jon Favreau voiced...
No, it was a lady. It was a lady on the ship. The Mandalorian left on...
Oh, the armorer?
Not a ship. Yes.
Emily Swallow, apparently.
No. Maybe it's not anyone famous.
I don't know who that is.
She had a very good voice.
Yeah, she's done...
She seems like a voice actor.
All I know is the woman who was her stunt double is awesome.
Fair enough. She just seems like actually just looks like a voice actor, but she had a great voice. Do you know what I mean?
She was a cracking character.
Yeah. Good character.
She was one of the standouts.
And she's actually done games as well. So yeah, maybe she's just a heavy voice actor, but she's great, man. That voice was killer. I just thought she just stood out a mile.
That scene she had when she takes out an entire troop of stormtroopers using only smithing tools. So she's basically got like tongs and a hammer and stuff like that, and they've all got blasters, was the epitome of badassery. And the fact that she was she was like their de facto leader, which she again was. Sort of goes some way to showing the way Mandalorian culture is. You know, it's not a case of the leaders have always got to be men, and it's not always got to be, you know, there was that huge guy that was voiced by Jon Favreau, the guy with the Gatling gun. You would look at him and say, well, he looks like he could be the leader because he's the biggest. Well, but she's the wisest. So it was a nice little sort of, and they all respected her. You know, when she said something, they all listened. When she stopped, when she broke up the fight between Mando and the big guy, they all listened. And she's obviously very wise. And you've got their beloved phrase that everyone's copied now, this is the way. And they're all very sort of dedicated to the wider Mandalorian teachings, but especially her teachings. And that's why Mando listens towards the end when she says about Baby Yoda's force powers, and she doesn't really talk that much about Jedis and the Order and the Jedi Knights, but she talks about them in a sort of generalized way, doesn't she, and says you've got to go and find these like wizard people because they're going to be better suited. And Mando respects her enough to say, well, yeah, okay, this is my quest. He doesn't go, really, you want me to traipse around the galaxy looking for fucking magic sword wielding wizards to look after this green rat thing? No, forget it. I've saved him. You can look after him. You know, she says, and they listen.
It's nice to hear the child being referred to as the green baby rat thing. That's probably not what they were pitching. But I
instantly, I'm just thinking about that scene when the two scout troopers who. Side note, Stu, fact of the day, I always preferred the look of scout troopers over stormtroopers because they got the cool speeder bikes in Return of the Jedi.
Mate, speeder bikes are just the coolest thing. Like, people slate Return of the Jedi a lot, but those speeder bike scenes are some of my favourite scenes from Star Wars, full stop. They're wicked.
Brilliant. They look so much fun. And it was great when they put them in Fallen Order.
Yeah, and they just missed those shots. That's the joke, isn't
it? Not Fallen Order, in Battlefront they were in. Shut up, Stuart. Idiot.
They're missing the shots, is the joke, isn't it? They just got no... They're looking at their guns again. What's going on?
They leaned into that one. But the way they were like, you know, the punching him when he's in the bag and he bites one of them, and that was, to me...
Keep going, can we look at the baby? Can we? I need to look at the baby. You know what I mean?
Like, I need to see it.
And I think the episode before that,
two famous people.
Probably. I felt like I knew the voice of one of them because it did feel
Adam
like
Adam Pally and Jason Sudeikis.
Oh, I know Jason Sudeikis. I know that name. Yeah. What was I going to say? The episode before is probably the one that really hooked me, which is the prison escape episode.
That was my favourite. I was going to ask you, that was my favourite of the whole series. That
really
gave serious vibes of like Aliens.
Well, the episode before wasn't so great. That was when he was hunting down that lady.
That was the gunslinger one that ended with one of the best Easter eggs of all time in any media, and then they didn't touch on it again, and that really pissed me off. The bit where the dead body of Ming-Na Wen, whatever her assassin's called, is in the just lying there in the desert, and then the gunslinger walks up. You can hear the what are they called? The things that jingle on the back of cowboys' boots, spurs. The spurs on the back.
Yeah, spurs. Yeah.
Without actually saying it, that was supposed to be a nod to it being Boba Fett, because Boba Fett always wore spurs. It was part of his whole shtick with his outfit. And the idea was meant to be, well, shit, either that's Boba Fett and he somehow escaped from the Sarlacc pit, or somebody has found Boba Fett's armor and is going to be walking around looking like one of the most infamous bounty hunters in the whole of the universe that nobody's seen for like 10 years or something. And the fact they didn't pay it off was annoying because it was like a really bad cock tease, but it's got to be something that they look back on in season two. They've got to look back on that.
That episode, as I said, wasn't great, I don't think. I think it was probably the weakest of the episodes.
I'd agree.
But the one after is the prison one, which I thought is probably the strongest, along with the final two. Obviously, the final two are great, and they kind of stand out. But I think that the prison as a standalone episode is just brilliant because he's back with those characters And just it's different characters, out,
isn't it?
Do you know what I mean?
It's shown off a little bit more of
oh yeah, it's who he was. Used to hang around with, what his kind of
when he
motives
was a proper
were.
Like scummy yeah. villain. He was just a bounty hunter. He was a thief. He would do whatever.
He'd do anything. Yeah.
Whereas
exactly.
now he's got, like we said before, he's got that code of honor, and he's acting more like a proper Mandalorian.
Yeah, there's some great characters though. The guy with the horns was really really cool. In that episode,
Rin Iowadi is the
it's a great robot, the droid in that one. Yeah, exactly. And then you had Mark Boone Jr., who you'll probably recognize from Batman Begins. He's been loads of stuff. Yeah, he was great. He's a really kind of safe pair of hands. And then I recognize, hold on, is she in Game of, no, she was in Harry Potter and About a Boy. It's a British actress who played the kind of crazy lady, Natalia. Sure, she was in Game of Thrones. Am I making that up?
I think she was in Game of Thrones.
She played Osha in Game of Thrones. You know who Osha is.
Yeah.
So she was. I don't know who that was, but what's that race of people that she was? That crazy.
Oh,
because they turn up in.
She was a wildling,
wasn't she? Yeah, no. In Star Wars, in The Mandalorian, they turn up all the time. That crazy looking aliens. Because her brother was the same.
I couldn't. The blue ones with the little curly horn things.
Yeah, but they turn up, don't they?
I've got idea what species.
I'm sure there's one in Return of the Jedi. I swear there's one, unless I'm just making it up.
Jabba the Hutt's right hand man is one of them, isn't he?
Yeah. That's probably who I'm thinking of, actually. Yeah,
and
there's a couple of others.
In the cantina scene, there's some of them in there.
Yeah.
Wileks.
Might be. I wish I knew this kind of stuff because it's quite a cool thing. But anyway, she was a cool character. I thought she was played out really well. I thought they all kind of linked in really well. I thought the kind of goon, the main guy, was a bit boring, but the other two made up for it. And there was a couple of... Did the red guy get killed or did he not? Did he spare them all?
He spared them all. They at the end,
because they implied
they were
that he had
all in prison.
Yeah, he implied he hadn't, and then he obviously did he was double-crossed, and he double-crossed them, which was a really nice ending to the episode, to be honest. I thought it was a great episode.
Because you had the whole thing with the X-Wings, didn't you? So the X-Wings blow up the station, and you assume, well, they're obviously...
And again, it was great to get the X-Wings. Do you know what I mean? There was a couple of good moments like that. I think that episode was great. I think that really is the one.
It's a nice way of leaning on a little bit of classic Star Wars, things that you look at and go, oh, look, it's the X-Wings, without really ramming it down your throat and going, ooh, Skywalker things, invading.
I think that's what it didn't... Yeah, and I think that's what people want from Star Wars now. I think they want the nice touches. They want the kind of familiarity that they like with certain elements, but they want something new. Yeah, it's a bit more subtle. Yeah. Less ram it down your throat, J.J. Abrams. Yeah.
It's what we hope for at the other series going forward. And it's like we've said on other things about like the Game of Thrones spin-offs. You know, it would be nice if you mention some other things, but, you know, don't just... tell us things that have happened in Game of Thrones, hint at them, you know, whisper them gently, but don't just throw bits that
we've
already
seen. Also, all we want is a little bit more of George R. R. Martin's kind of vision, really, because there's enough to go, you know, in Game of Thrones. It doesn't have to be the same story. It can be something completely different. I know they tried to do that with Lord of the Rings. It's going to be interesting what happens with Lord of the Rings TV show, which Prime are putting in crazy amounts of money into.
Oh, God,
even getting the rights cost a lot.
Didn't you say that in total it's like $1 billion or something is going into the TV show?
I think minimum, because I think it was 500 million or at least 250 million just to cure the rights to to do it. And then it's huge budgets to be, you know, getting quite big people involved, going to be filming in New Zealand for a long period of time. Obviously, Peter Jackson owns half of New Zealand, so it'll all be him involved in it. I hope he's not too heavily involved, because the original trilogy is perfect, but they really screwed up The Hobbit by making it three films when it needed to really only be one, maybe two at most, and they just messed around too much with it. There's still a bit to like in there, but, you know, I hope Peter Jackson's not going to do a George Lucas and get too involved, because The Hobbit was going to be done by Guillermo del Toro, which would have been something special, but he just couldn't commit to the length of time when they pushed it to three films or two films, three films. So that's the thing. You want these things to be run by the right people. I think that's what we liked about this show, is you can see they they got all the right kind of producers involved, all the right kind of technical stuff involved. The special effects are really quite seamless, but not heavy. Do you know what I mean? There's not too much of it. So I like the kind
seems
of
to be
down
a lot
to earth feel about
a lot
it.
Of practical effects, isn't there? Which I'm a big fan of.
It's a bit more real again.
It's something that Star Wars does really well. They do the CGI spaceships and all the rest of it, but they do
I don't
the practical
like it when they do the big
so
stuff.
well.
I don't like the big stuff in Star Wars. I never liked it because we were brought up on it being about, you know, practical effects because that's what they had at the time. Do you know what I mean? Well, they had some very cleverly well done special effects at the time, but a lot of it was just practical effects. It was set design. It was, you know, you're in the forest planet, you're in this, you're in that. So I kind of didn't like it when they go over the top. I think Solo was quite good because it tried to strip it back to doing that again. You know, Rogue One was a bit of that feel again. So Mandalorian just kind of leaned much more into that. And I think that's what we all kind of like about Star Wars is the kind of less uber sci-fi, you know, I think we like the more grounded sci-fi approach to things. So yeah, that's really what I got out of the season. But the prison episode and then those final two were just electric, man. They're really, really
good. Really put the foot down on the last couple of episodes. And you mentioned then about sort of innovations in technology. One of the things that they've done in this, which is gaining a lot of attention, is they've taken green screen and they've like put it on steroids. All of their outdoor scenes that they've done were filmed inside using 360-degree video screens and basically like a travelator on the floor. So when you see them walking across a desert, that's Pablo Pascal or someone else, you know, with Quill, whoever does the bodywork for the Ugnaught. They are walking on a travelator and this
it's
giant
like Ready Player One
in
real life.
This 360 degree screen around them is changing and making it look like they move. So they can literally be anywhere in the world in any kind of environment and they don't leave the soundstage. And when you see they put a picture up of it months ago and you see it zoomed out and all this, the rigging that goes around it, and it's huge, like 4K LED screens all around them. And it is stunning to see. And when you go back and you look at it now and you see those scenes and you're like, well, I was trying to figure out, you know, I wonder where in the world they are. You know, could they have been in Europe? Have they had to go to Africa to film that and what have you?
Yeah.
But then they've still done, like the cockpit scenes are still done in the classic way. They've got a small cockpit, you know, that's a few foot wide with a camera mounted on the front. And the director is sat about 15 feet away from this rig and it's shaking when they get shot, and then they tilt it all over the place, and you've literally got the Mandalorian and you've got the puppet for the baby sat next to him. So you've got ultra high tech, but then you've got, as we were saying, classic Star Wars practical effects, as dumb and as low tech as you can possibly get, and it looks great. And then you blend the two of them and it looks a lot more organic and a lot more natural. But like you said, I prefer that. I've always liked practical effects, even if they look a little bit cheap and shitty.
We always talk about Batman, don't we? We always talk about Batman Begins and The Dark Knight. Nolan is just monstrously big on practical effects. He really doesn't buy much into the other stuff. I know Inception and Interstellar are pretty otherworldly, but wherever he can, he'll work with practical effects. And it stands the test of time. I think in any kind of pop culture kind of fiction, you know, stuff, I think it generally is a better fit. I think there's certain things that aren't, you know, but I think when we talk about Guardians of the Galaxy and various things like that, I prefer that when they're on the ship and it's less effect heavy. I think when they go full CGI, when he's fighting Ego and stuff, it just gets a bit too much because it's green screen on green screen. Do you know what I mean? And then it becomes a bit chaotic. I think when they strip it back to being more practical effects where they can, then it works much, much better. I know it's tricky in films like that, but you know, some of the Marvel films, like you said, people are craving the Black Widow because maybe they want something a little bit more action heavy that's a little bit less high stakes, do you know what I mean? And like the practical fights and stuff. So you know, this is something I think people were crying out for, because I think Star Wars, you know, if you like the new trilogy or not, it wasn't perfect for fans. I don't think it wasn't perfect for Disney because it certainly didn't make the money that Disney expected it to. I know it made $1 billion, but for them, when Endgame is making whatever it made, you know what I mean? They're expecting Star Wars as their huge property to do the same, if not more, probably. So I think for them, this show has been a massive success and shows that maybe a slightly more back to basics approach is maybe the way to go. And that's why maybe they've ripped up a lot of these plans they had for Star Wars and they're starting again. That's certainly what it feels like, because whatever they were doing with Obi-Wan has been certainly postponed for an indefinite amount of time. Obviously,
it is still pre-coronavirus.
You know, I'm sure it all happened.
There was a lot of rumours going around that it had been indefinitely shelved and all the rest of it. But
No. It'll happen.
Ewan McGregor spoke out about it very, very briefly. And he did say it is absolutely still going ahead. It was only put back by, you know, a very, very small amount of months. It's not what people were saying where it's been completely killed or anything like that.
No. I just think, you know, I think they're just going to have to be a bit more choosy with what they do. Do you know what I mean? Because I think if you're just throwing, I think Solo proved that to an extent, you know, not everyone will just rush towards Star Wars property anymore. It's not Marvel, I don't think. I mean, Marvel have to work hard, don't get me wrong, to get the property right, but I think a lot of people will just go out to see a Marvel film now, whereas I don't think Star Wars ever had to always fight for the audience. It was always there, but I think they've realised that it's got to be the right film and the right script and the right show or whatever for people to really keep interested, and they've got to rebuild this, you know, back up to where they want it to be.
Rebuild some of the trust that they've lost with the last three films, because they have lost a lot of people with the, you know, the
well, it was always going to lose people anyway, because you're going to get it's the same with anything. It's been going on
since the late 70s. It's hard to keep something that and people, fresh for that
and
long.
People have, because it's such an inbuilt. So Marvel, obviously, it might be similar with us, you know, not our generation, but the future generation that are watching Marvel films, if they're doing a reboot of something in, say, 20 years' time, they're going to be up in arms because it's not like what it was in Endgame. Do you know what I mean? So it's people
grow up. It's
that
generational thing, isn't it? You know, Star Wars arguably is three different generations.
It is, but that, you know, that core generation that bought the original action figures and kept them in the boxes, you know, that was the original kind of geek syndrome. Do you know what I mean? It was the original fanboys.
You know, they hate everything.
Well, no, don't get me wrong, because yeah, they're still in their mum's basement and, you know, still got their
still
box
mac and cheese
and from their Star Wars lunchbox that they got in 1976. You know, and they've still got their Luke Skywalker original, you know,
original
number 37 copy that's in the box and not scuffed and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And that's how you picture them. You picture them like the comic book guy in The Simpsons, obviously, because we all do. But you know, they've been up in arms for various different reasons, but you know, it's not got that Marvel following. I don't think it's had that mainstream mass appeal that Marvel has had in recent years. But Marvel had to work extremely hard to get that. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't given to them on a plate. And I think Star Wars just is going to have to do the same. But I think The Mandalorian is a massive step in the right direction for them, in terms of both getting the balance right in the marketing side with all the memes and all the stuff that came out with the Baby Yoda stuff, and also just producing a show that actually people really liked and got behind, both critically and then, you know, people watching at home. So it's Jon Favreau is a very safe pair of hands, let's put it that way. And I think I'm excited to see where it goes next, but I'm also kind of excited to see what they do with other Star Wars properties, and, you know, people like Taika involved is obviously a good thing really overall. So yeah, it's the future Star Wars is in fairly safe hands.
Forward is they've announced very, very little about season two, but we know we are getting live action Ahsoka Tano, who was by far one of the standout characters from the Clone Wars. So she, for anyone that doesn't know, she was Anakin's Padawan.
Even I know who she is, because she's just a famous character,
She's come along sort of like Harley Quinn did. She's broken out. She was Anakin's Padawan for many years during the Clone Wars. She ended up leaving the Jedi Order. I won't say why, because it would be a huge spoiler. and then she was out for the whole of season 6, but then she comes back in season 7. She also appears in Rebels when she's much older. She must be sort of 10, 15 years older by this point. So yeah. She's a kid, like a teenager in the Clone Wars, and then she comes back and she's an actual full-grown adult. And for years, there's been talk of Rosario Dawson playing her. And if you search Rosario Dawson Ahsoka Tano, you get all these brilliant fan pictures, you know, that have been mocked up. And she tweeted about it, I think it was maybe 2017.
Oh, it's all but confirmed. So
somebody asked her, would you like to play it? And she was like, fuck yes, I would love to play Ahsoka. And she's been hashtagging it, and she's been, oh, I hate to use the phrase, but she's been standing that casting for years. And it makes me think that this in some way has been in the works for years. Like the whole, The Rock has been playing Black Adam since the mid-2000s because they were always, they slated him to play. It was just a case of when. I wonder if she's been penciled in to play the role and it was a case of, right, we don't know when. We don't know if it'll be TV or film, what it'll be about. But at some point, we will get you playing Ahsoka Tano. And now the fact that she's coming in, so she's going to be sort of maybe 40s, you know, she might have a family.
Yeah, she's 79, she's about 40 years old in terms of,
yeah. It's going to be an interesting take on the character for anyone that likes her. You'll have seen her as a kid, then you'll have seen her as an adult, and now you'll have seen her as a much more grizzled adult who's seen and done probably a lot more sketchy shit. And it's very interesting.
And can we just say that we massively stan Rosario Dawson?
Of course, Rosario Dawson is brilliant. And I'm like, that's
you will
love
her in Zombieland Double Tap when you eventually get around to watching it. I'm just putting it out there.
I keep forgetting to bloody watch it.
I know, it's a great film. I need to watch it again. It's really fun. And you'll love it because it's a 90-minute great film. But she's just done so much good work. She was kind of, as much as we loved everyone in the kind of Daredevil Marvel stuff, I think she's the one that was consistently great throughout. Do you know what I mean? Because she, you know, even across all the series she was involved in, Luke Cage and whatnot, she was just so good in that.
We described her as like she was the connective tissue, wasn't she? That weaved all of the different things, all the different properties together. Another brilliant piece of casting that they did. This was in the first season. There's this fan organization called the 501st Legion. And they're really hardcore, dedicated Star Wars fans. And they needed a big group of extras to play stormtroopers in the 7th episode when we first see Moff Gideon arrive in his huge TIE fighter. All of those, they're all basically Star Wars fans. And a lot of them wearing their own armor that they've made for like conventions and stuff like that. And the Star Wars people reached out to them and said, look, we know you're diehard fans. How would you like to come along and be on set and be extras? And of course, these people, this will have made their day to have been included. And speaking of Moff Gideon, that one of the final scenes when you see him cut it, you assume he's dead when his TIE fighter gets shot down. You then see him cut his way out using this black lightsaber. Anyone that doesn't know, it's been a huge part of the animated series lore for years. It's called the Darksaber. It belonged to, I think, anyone please correct me if I'm wrong, there's only ever been one Mandalorian who was ever inducted into the Jedi Order. This was his lightsaber. And when he died, it was taken back to Mandalore. And ever since then, it's been used as like a token of power. So anyone who wielded the Darksaber was seen as being like the de facto leader of Mandalorians. And it's been held by some good people who were honorable and some dicks who were a bit more right-wing and oppressive. And it's now interesting because it's a case of, well, this guy was an Imperial security officer. How the hell did he come into this symbol of Mandalorian power? And you assume it took place on the Purge, because we find out, don't we, that Moff Gideon actually knows Mando, aka Din Djarin.
Yeah,
and he knows about him, and he said, well, the only way he could know that is, you know, he's clearly had access to the archives and he's read up about me. So it sounds like while they were on Mandalore, he's gone and ransacked a bunch of things. And to me, I my first thought from that was, it sounds like when, you know, Nazis were stealing artwork and things like that, and it happened with Allied forces as well, apparently were said to have, when they were taking down Nazi strongholds, they were taking things like stolen artwork or valuables that they knew were going to be worth something. And maybe that's what he's done, but then he's using this as like a symbol of his power. It also means that there is a much greater chance that we are going to get some lightsaber fights in the second season. And it sounds like Giancarlo Esposito himself, he has been going hardcore on these fight scenes because they've got a bunch of prop swords. And apparently his big thing is he's been breaking all of these prop swords because he can't dial it down. And he's going so hardcore when he's fighting that he keeps snapping these swords because they're already filming, or they might already have filmed season two. I think they started filming season two before season one had even aired. So they've clearly, as we've said, got a lot of faith that this is a property that's going to do well commercially and critically for them to have already greenlit a second season. Normally you expect most places get, you see them greenlight a second season after the first season is finished, once they've seen how it's been received. Some places maybe might get it halfway through the first season. You know, you might get your first 9 episodes, then you get your renewal and they'll say, right, well, we want a full season order as well. So it's interesting that they're looking this far ahead, but that gives me much more confidence in terms of the story they're telling, that they're already planning for the next probably, what, maybe 16 to 20 episodes. So they've already got a huge chunk of the story planned out. So there's less chance of us getting to the end of season two and having some dangling plot lines when it gets cancelled, yeah, like we've seen in other things, like we had with the Netflix series. We've had some brilliant things were set up in Daredevil Nine Fist that we're never going to get the answers to. And it's good that hopefully, in theory, we shouldn't get this. And especially with it being an original series, it's highly unlikely that they're going to plow money into making 3 seasons of this and then go, I think we'll just can it. Like, you've got that threat when it's broadcast on regular networks. Yeah. This is going to be decided by Disney. It's not going to be decided by AMC or, you know, CBS or ABC or any of the other networks, who are so fickle that a show can go from being absolute dog's bollocks in January to being absolute trash and garbage by like March, and it gets binned.
It's because the writers walk off the shows half the time, I think. Do you know what I mean? Like on those networks, if someone gets a better offer, they just leave, and it's just that kind of loyalty is lost there. And I think, you know, Disney aren't gonna certainly, well, they might underpay certain staff in their industry and in their company, but they certainly don't underpay the writers, the directors, the producers, the heavy people involved in these projects. So yeah, I think it's a safe project for them to pin, along with all the Marvel TV shows that they're going to work on. And that's their main property. I mean, they've got Fox stuff they can work towards. Obviously Simpsons is something they'll look at, various other bits and pieces, but you know, Disney is not limited, but you know, their Pixar and their animation stuff is huge, but they're quite big on their launch stuff. You know, they a few films a year are massive, you know, and all the merchandise and work around that, but they don't throw a lot of things. You know what I mean? Like CW will just throw 20 shows out there and hope 8 of them stick. Do you know what I mean? So it's going to be quite different with Disney. And same with Apple and Netflix, I think, generally work on a higher volume kind of hope success rate. And if something doesn't work out, like the OA, which was extremely popular but cost a load of money, and well, it was cult followed. It wasn't extremely popular, so they just canned it. So I think Disney's going to work a little bit differently. And so, yeah, Mandalorian will probably remain their key show from the Star Wars side of things, and then they might just work around that, and obviously all the other stuff they can use. So yeah, it's going to be a big show for many years to come. I would imagine you will get lots more Baby Yoda products in and around your life. So.
Yes, and as you mentioned before, the fact that they've got Dave Filoni sitting at it, who it clearly is like part of the inner Star Wars circle. He's in the, you know, he's in the trusted committee.
It's the same with your people that are in the inner Marvel sanctum. You know, they're quite key people are in and around it.
You get the impression that he's kind of being put in there as like their Kevin Feige, that he might be.
Yeah, I wasn't going to say that quite, but he's certainly in that kind
in that
of
mold.
Seat. Yes.
Obviously on a whole different scale when you're talking about the TV series side of things, but the same idea that he'll anchor everything down. And
well, I swear Feige is not even human, to be honest. So I think he does so much work, that guy, that I barely think he's even human. So yeah. I'm sure Filoni's not quite at that caliber, because not many, I don't think anyone else is, but you know, certainly be a kind of crucial figure in and around Star Wars. And it's been the same with Spider-Man and various, you know, they've tried to keep these crucial producers or knowledgeable people in and around that kind of maybe know what the fans like and don't, because of maybe trial and error from years and years of working on stuff. So yeah, it's going to be interesting keeping that guy around, and like you said, having people like Favreau, when they can bring in Taika and go, hey, direct an episode, direct a film, do you know what I mean? It's they kind of have the pick of these great people to work with. And they trust that they'll do a good job because they keep bringing them back. So, yeah, be interesting to see what happens with it. But no, I'm glad we reviewed it and talked about it in a decent amount of detail. Obviously, it's this series, you could talk about these things in a lot more depth. But, you know, we just touched on the major points and what we liked and, you know, what kind of – they've got a lot to work with, I think. You know, I think it was a good opening season, got better and better as it went on, and then, you know, the next season doesn't have much world building or character building to do. It can just kind of launch in there and go from there. So it's going to be quite exciting when it eventually drops, because obviously the current situation is going to push back a lot of content, I think, in terms of filming and producing. Yeah. So we'll see what happens with everything. We're not going to get into all that kind of stuff now, but you know, needless to say, we're going to be missing a lot of our mainstream releases probably for a good portion of the rest of this year, and then it's going to be pushed back a lot next year. So, but we will eventually get there. Isn't there like 4 Marvel films dropping next year or the year after or something crazy? So it's all going to come back around. Yeah, well, we'll see what happens with all these schedules. They're all going to be messed up over the next kind of 12 months anyway. So, yeah. But no, that was great. Good to cover. Really good thing to talk about. Any quick recommendations people to watch before you go? Probably going to be the Clone Wars.
I've said it a million times. I may as well say it again. Yeah, please, you should all go and watch the Clone Wars and Rebels. And I've started watching Riverdale, which has been good.
Have you really?
Yeah.
Wow, proper teen Netflix show, isn't it?
I always plan on watching it because I like...
Well, you like Sabrina, don't you?
I like their retelling of Sabrina, and this is kind of in the same book. So it's...
Yeah, they said it's in the kind of same... Yeah, there's nothing wrong with those kind of shows, actually, to be honest. Like, Laura watches a little bit of it, and they're fine. They kind of, you know, pass the time in the background and all that kind of stuff. So it's not too bad when you got a switch in your hand. As I said earlier, devs, please, everyone watch Devs. You need to watch it as well. It's only 8 parts, and it's just incredible TV. Alex Garland, who's just the pioneer of that style of sci-fi, really. And then Gangs of London is a really good, gritty, British-based show, one of the best of that style. A couple of episodes in there that are just unbelievable. And yeah, if you really want to lose tens of hours into a game, maybe pick up Animal Crossing, because it's quite addictive when you're stuck in a house and you can build an island and go fishing and do all this kind of stuff. Especially if you're a bit OCD like me, it becomes a bit obsessive. But you know, other than that, waiting for Last of Us Part 2 and just plowing on, really, man. So yeah, we'll try and keep these coming. We've been a little bit more regular lately with the content. If there's anything you'd like us to discuss, I know we got a shout out for Devs, but I don't even know where to begin with that show, and I know you'd have to watch it first. But yeah, anyone else got anything they'd want us to cover during our lockdown, even if it's something a little bit more relaxed and not as heavy on something specific, then you know, hook us up and we'll try and get it out there for you.
Yeah, and in the meantime, let us know your thoughts on the series, favorite episodes, favorite characters, and things like that. We'll catch you next time. This is the way.